Hello, and welcome to another episode of I Nearly Called It DDT. I'm going to start again. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Must See Matches, a special episode of Must See Matches, as will become apparent as we carry on. I am the loudmouth host, Kieran Lefort, and joining me is the quiet XL guy, Mark Buckledy, the man behind Mark Must See Matches. Mark, how's it going?
I'm good. I saw my first wrestling show of the year at the weekend, and it had some good matches.
I saw your tweets. Apparently, there are a couple of cracking good matches on it.
Yeah, it was... I had expectations and it kind of over-exceeded. So yeah, I was very pleased.
Tremendous. The match we're doing today is Akito versus Asuka, not that one, from DDT's Wrestle Peter Pan 2019, July the 15th, 2019, Otowar Gymnasium, about 3,800 in the building. And it is the Ippon Light Tube Death Match. And joining us to talk about this match is the creator of Dramatic DDT, an invaluable resource for English-speaking DDT fans. Jamie O'D is here. Jamie, how are you doing?
Doing great. Really excited to talk about this because I think this is one of the more imaginative matches that is showing up on your list.
Yeah, I think so too. So as with all new guests, I'm going to ply you with the three questions of doom. How did you get into wrestling to start with? What made you a wrestling fan?
I've been a fan for as long as I can remember. Maybe my earliest memories was either seeing Ultimate Warrior or Hulk Hogan and WWF on Sky One when I was like 3 or 4 years old. And it just stuck with me my entire life. It's just something I've really, really enjoyed. I think part of it is just because it was maybe the closest thing to real-life superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And adding that to sport, for some reason, just really clicks with me. So like superheroes fighting each other for athletics reasons, it's just something I really enjoy.
So the love of real-life superheroes translate into the love of Hyper Misao and then the love of DDT?
Kind of, because as I got older, one of the things I loved about pro wrestling was the comedy aspect of it. And I discovered DDT through the Chikara King of... Actually, no, sorry. It was Chikara's Tag World Grand Prix in 2006, where one of the teams entering the tournament was Kudo and Mikami, representing DDT.
Mm-hmm.
They were one of the better teams in the tournament, had some fantastic performances. And when I went to look online to find out more information about them, I started hearing about all of these weird things about the promotion, including stuff like ladders winning championships, the ladder getting a retirement ceremony, a group named the Italian Four Horsemen who was feuding with a bunch of French aristocrats. And it really just captured my imagination. And I wanted to find out more and more about just this bizarre, crazy cartoon wrestling promotion come to life.
And what made you decide to set up the site?
So around 2009, I was just really into the company and I was writing about it often on just different wrestling message boards. And it led to the point where no one else was really covering DDT at the time, so I wanted to be the one to do that. Like, I'm a bit of a copycat at heart, so when I saw that there were all these different fan sites for the different Japanese promotions, no one was doing DDT, I took it upon myself to be the DDT guy.
And almost like today, still no one's doing DDT apart from you.
Well, I mean, there's Mr. Haku who's doing it now. It was in a semi-official fashion because he was for the company.
Yeah, he was more of a, like, as you say, like an official capacity. But like in terms of like fan sites and stuff, and I think he might, I don't know, he might have to be, had to have been a bit more political than a fan would have to be.
I mean, I'm kind of the same sometimes because I have been in contact with DDT. I visited their offices in 2016 and spoke to Senshiro Takagi himself. And like they are completely fine with what I do, but there just are times where I've been told, like, be careful which websites I try to translate from because I'll be technically stealing copyrighted information if I'm taking from the wrong place. Because like some of the interviews these wrestlers do are exclusive material for, say, Shuken Pro Wrestling or for Tokyo Sports.
I see. Interesting. Well, this is the only DDT match to make the 104. I know, Mark, you mentioned in passing last week when we were talking about Kota Ibushi versus Hiroshi Tanahashi that other DDT matches had been nominated.
Yeah.
This is also the only intergender match to make the 104. And Asuka is the only trans wrestler to make the 104. And to round out all the special bits and pieces to do with this episode, this is the last match in the 5.5% bracket. So we move into another bracket of nominations next week. And this is the first match we're talking about. This is a spoiler for possibly how we feel about this match. This is the first match we're talking about that both Mark and I nominated for the project.
And there's not many of those.
No, there's not. There's not. And I think it's going to be fun when we get to them. I mean, it's all going to be spoiler alert stuff, I think. Like, neither of us like nominated matches we absolutely hate. We previously talked about this. We, in another life, had another podcast called DD Teach. And on episode 3, we did 3 matches to get someone new into DDT. However, our mics were shit. We only gave it 10 minutes. And through no fault of our own, we misgendered Asuka. So at the time of the match and at the time of our episode, she was labeled as Japan's first genderless pro wrestler. And then in April 2022, she did an interview where she said that that was more of a promotional thing and not how she's ever felt about herself. She uses it in Japan because it's because that's like a less forward thinking country in these terms, and to kind of keep an air of intrigue and mystery. But she identifies as female, and that's how we will address her. The aforementioned Haku-san also brings up the topic really well in an interview he did with her on his Kotatsu Studios YouTube channel. He brings it up in the context of the differences between the Japanese and English languages. And again, there she confirms that she is her favorite pronoun. She talks about this match on that as well. He calls it his favorite Asuka match. She says she got her first standing ovation from the other wrestlers when she came back through the curtain. Says she's feeling the pressure because the previous Ippon Light Tube match between Akito and Jun Kasai had been really good. And also, she'd hardly slept the night before this match. Mark, what else from DDT got nominated? Was there anything other than this and Kota Ibushi matches? Like, was there like any like random Iron Man heavy metalweight title stuff?
Oh, I have prepped for this question.
And how many of these are your nominations?
There's a couple. There's a couple. So,
okay. List them out and I'll judge you.
So 21 DDT matches got nominations. The ones that got nominated by more than one person. Sanshiro Takagi versus Minoru Suzuki empty Tokyo Dome match.
Yep.
Okay.
Both Kota Ibushi versus Yoshihiko matches, which, if people actually decided on one or the other, would have actually made the podcast list.
Okay, so my personal preference would be the first match in Kirkland Hall. I understand why the second match was voted on, because that is on YouTube and I assume has more people who've seen it.
Yeah. The second match did get the more nominations, but as I say, the first one also got a couple of people nominating. Yoshihiko had a third nomination with more than one vote, which was the Takeshita match from 2020 Peter Pan, which was basically, it was a version of the Undertaker versus AJ Styles Boneyard match, cinematic style.
And did you vote for that one? Because you've mentioned that before in conversation.
I did not vote for that.
Okay.
It also
he can't be trusted, Jamie.
It also preceded Randy Orton ripping Rey Mysterio's eye out by about 2 months. Dick Togo versus Antonio Honda, which is a bit of a classic and maybe what Honda's best ever match.
Yeah, that's a hidden gem.
Yeah, it is actually worth seeking out that one. And the last one with more than one nomination, the Suicide Boys of Mikami and Tanamasak Toba versus Kota Ibushi and Daisuke Kakimoto from 05.
Oh, wow. Jeez. That is generations ago, because if you kind of see how nowadays, like, you have Takeshita and Endo, they kind of got into the business together. Daiichi was like Ibushi's rival/tag partner. They were meant to be the generation pairing, but Daichi ended up getting a spinal injury and had to retire.
Mm. And that was one that I nominated because it was a great example of using two wrestlers in a tag match and their interactions. Basically, Ibushi learning to cope with Toba throughout the match is actually a fantastic mid-match story that I absolutely loved. But we're talking about the random ones. So these are the ones that only got one vote. So we had modern ones that are actually actual good matches, like Higuchi versus Okabayashi. We had the both parts of the Nautilus versus Eruption six-man tag title into tag title match, which Nautilus versus Eruption is Naomi Yoshimura and Yuki Ueno versus Kazusada Higuchi and Yukio Sakaguchi.
Yeah, I definitely recommend watching those two matches back to back. Like, officially, they were down as two separate matches, but the entire story was the two together into one.
Ibushi versus Omega only got one nomination.
The Nippon Budokan Budokan.
Yeah.
Now, as amazing of a match that is, I think the first ever meeting they had, which was the best two out, three falls match in Shinkiba First Ring, is probably one of the most important wrestling matches in the last, what year was it? But pretty much of this century.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you imagine the butterfly effect that match had on the entire wrestling landscape.
You consider the story of Kenny Omega joining DDT was Omega basically with one of his wrestling friends filmed almost like a Falls Count Anywhere like match that went viral. And was that his audition video, Jamie, or was it more that DDT just saw that and decided they liked the guy?
No, I think he sent it in as an audition, I think.
Mm. The story I heard was he had seen Kota Ibushi and was like, I want to wrestle that guy, and made this wacky tape that found its way to the DDT offices. I think it's like six or one and a half a dozen of the other. Mm. It was meant as an audition, but indirectly, perhaps.
Speaking of wacky, there are two matches that are very wacky that were nominated. One is not technically a match. Jamie, it's DDT Apartment Complex Wrestling. Which, if no one's seen it, imagine the raid with Kota Ibushi clearing an apartment block full of wrestlers doing strange things, including Tsuyoshi Kikuchi, famous of Kenta Kobashi's tag partner from the 90s, growing watermelons. The one that I did nominate, and Kieran is probably going to give me a look for this, is it's a personal favorite and it is a wacky stip. It's Harashima versus Antonio Honda from 2013. It's the blindfold bra match.
He's obsessed.
I love this match.
This has come up on both podcasts.
It's absolutely stupid, and yet they take this stupid gimmick and it just works completely, and I fucking love it.
Yeah, that's DDT style to a T.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. So those are the notable ones that were nominated from DDT. Also, I want to point out, Yoshihiko had three matches nominated. That's as many matches as Taz, Sammy Callahan, Roddy Piper, Kane, and Harley Race had on their own. He had more nominations than Cody, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Tommy Dreamer.
That might be my new favorite stat. A blow-up doll has more matches nominated than Cody Rhodes.
I'm just thinking of those five together, and that's like a nightmare Survivor Series team.
He has more than Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, and Ronda Rousey combined.
No comments.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, that's my random stat.
Tremendous.
Akito did have one other nominated, which is one of my nominations, which was the Akito versus Shigehiro Irie Last Man Standing from Nagoya, which in hindsight, I probably would have swapped out with another match from Akito's extreme title runs.
Hmm. Well, Akito here is the extreme champion. And the story going in, correct me if I get anything wrong and fill in any blanks, Asuka takes umbrage at him not defending it in particularly extreme match types, and she suggests a 100 or 200 light tubes match. And Akito goes, okay, you can have light tubes. You can have one light tube. The segment explaining the rules before the match is absolute gold. So,
brilliant.
It's Mizuki Watase and Keigo Nakamura. And they have a, representing the light tube is a foam baseball bat wrapped in gaffer tape. And they demonstrate that if you hit your opponent with the light tube, you lose immediately. So Watase whacks Nakamura on the head. And then Nakamura is angry and baffled and happy all at once that he won, but he got beamed on the head. They then demonstrate that if you put the light tube on your opponent and perform a move through it, you lose. And again, Nakamura gets snap-mared to the mat and the bat put on him and splashed. And again, he is baffled and angry that he won. But if you put your opponent through the light tube, you win. So again, Nakamura is picked up and body slammed on the foam bat. He is angry that he has been body slammed. The third party here is referee Yukinori Matsui, who is always a comedy highlight, who goes over to raise Nakamura's hand, and Nakamura thinks he's won again, but he then peels off and raises Watase's hand instead. I also loved Watase's mock distress at losing the first two demonstrations and then celebrating winning the third like he's just scored a home run or has just like won a really important match. It's great. Pins and submissions also count. I think even if you don't speak Japanese, this very simply sets out the rules.
Yeah.
It's something that works better here, because usually when you see American TV shows trying to explain the rules as a match, they just put a graphic on the screen with line after line after line of rules. Whereas here, it visually just explains to you.
Mate, we've got war games to come. That's pages of rules.
So I want to quickly touch on Asuka. So Asuka's 20 at this point, and she debuted at the age of 16. So she'd only been wrestling for 4 years. So at the same time as this show, she's also wrestling in the 01 Fire Festival. So for anyone that doesn't know, the 01 Fire Festival is 01 Pro Wrestling's version of the G1. And 01 is,
and it's almost always won by Masato Tanaka.
Yes, and 01 is a men's promotion. So here is Asuka wrestling intergender in that tournament, and at this point she had already wrestled in within a week or 2 weeks of this show. She'd already wrestled Yuji Hino in it's a really good match, actually, that Yuji Hino match, because it's all about Asuka earning Hino's respect. Yuji Hino, Super Tiger, Chris Weiss. She wrestled Sugi, of all people, the 2000s Japanese high-flying sensation who
Yoshitsune. Yeah, the man of 1,000 gimmicks.
Yeah, Hellblazer.
Hellblazer.
Hustle Kamen Red. What's the...
Ahi?
That's the one from all Japan, yeah.
God, how big must that guy's wardrobe have been to have all those different costumes and gimmicks in it?
He was Minishima, wasn't he?
Maybe. I don't know. That was the point of Toriumon I checked out of.
So basically, the day before this match, Asuka wrestled Sugi. And on the last night of the tournament of the Fire Festival, she got her only win against Masato Tanaka.
Tremendous. So something else just quickly I'm interested in, you talking about Asuka's age here. I'm interested to find out who has the shortest time from debut to a must-see match in the 104, because Asuka's in with a shout. She's 3 years and 11 months in at this point. I think it's something to think about. Maybe we'll throw out some wacky stats like that when we do our final episode. Because that's a lot of research, but I think there can't be many, if any, that are closer than that.
Probably not. I'm going to write a note. And
Higuchi in any of the match lists?
No, Higuchi did not make.
Okay, because I remember his thing for the first 2-3 years of his career was super lucky, first man to get the KOD title shot with Hiroshima. So I figured that if that match was on the list, it would have been the answer.
No, I mean, the list, I'm only counting like the 104 matches we're going to be talking about for this show. The only other person I can think of who might be close might be Dustin Rhodes for War Games 92, because I think he debuted sometime in 1988, but it would be a close run thing.
Yeah, I have literally written myself a note, and because I'm a Luddite, I've written it in pencil.
Tremendous. That'll get lost under the desk.
Jamie, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Well, just that you mentioned earlier about how Akito wanted this match to just be one single light tube. His logic, and it was proven in the match itself from the reaction of the crowd, is that just building up to one light tube being destroyed is more exciting than just smashing 100 light tubes in a row.
Absolutely. And having been present at a match where lots of light tubes were smashed, I can also tell you it's much less dangerous for the audience if only one is getting smashed. So we start by attaching the tube vertically to the ropes and trying Irish whips into it, completely the crowd joining in a baseball style safe every time it's avoided. So the version we watched is on YouTube. But I'm reliably informed that a full official version, the light tube gets its own entrance.
Yep, it does.
I can tell you, it gets its own chant to start the match. The crowd chant Kekoto, which is light tube. So they throw it back and forward to each other. Akito drop kicks Asuka's knee, and she avoids a face first bump onto the thing. Akito puts the tube in the center of the ring, and they do some close call chain wrestling around it, like tumble reverses and snapmare reverses and back bridges over it. It's really good, like standard issue chain wrestling with the added complication of avoiding a light tube.
Thing about this match, and even from the very beginning, as Kieran said with a chant, this is a kind of match that would not work anywhere except DDT. And one of the main reasons for that is because the DDT audience have so much faith and trust in DDT, they will buy into anything and give it time.
I think, Jamie, you can confirm any massive blunders. I think when DDT do a wacky stip, they get it right more often than they get it wrong.
I think so. Now, it's not often that the massive stipulation is something that could be very dangerous if it backfires, because we're dealing with a glass light tube here. It helps that they just explain everything beforehand. Also, this was a match that has been done a few times before on smaller DDT shows. I think the first one went back to 2015. There was a sub-series of shows called Tavern Pro Wrestling, where all of the wrestlers who are part of DDT's restaurant and dining business got together and ran their own shows. And that was where Akito started doing that kind of matches, including the one with Jun Kasai that was mentioned earlier.
Mm. I'm trying to think of a clever acronym for DDT to do with food, and all I came up with was dinner and tea. So...
That's not on my level, mate.
No, I know. So Asuka goes for some kicks, but Akito smugly holds the tube in the way, and Asuka very calmly lowers it and wallops him with a slap.
Oh, that's great.
He responds by chucking her off the top rope while she's holding the tube. And at this point, you can see one of the ringside cameramen has a huge grin on his face. He's enjoying this as much as the crowd are. Asuka does a Blue Thunder style Uranage that I don't think I've ever seen anyone else do. It's a really cool move. Akito is also holding the tube at this point, and she also hits a bridging German suplex while he's still holding onto it for a two count, just to reinforce that traditional wrestling rules, hardcore wrestling rules, because there's no DQ, also apply here. Akito prevents a tope by simply holding the tube up and then hangs it outside the ropes. He takes a whip into it, but the tube merely bounces around outside the rope, but he sells it big and the crowd love it because they thought it was disaster. Asuka then flips it back in the other way, so it's hanging from, they attach them with rubber bands, she flips it over so it's hanging back inside, but gets whipped towards it and somehow manages to get one foot either side of it on the middle rope and comes back with an Azai moonsault. Brilliant.
One of the strengths of this match is that so much of the drama is based on the wrestlers having just fantastic body control, especially from Asuka. It's about, because if you think about it, if any of these spots, they get off or they don't hit right or they go at the wrong angle, they're breaking the light tube. So it adds to that real sense of drama in the match.
Yeah. 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 Any misstep could end the match. I guess it's the DDT Extreme title. Like they don't have many long-term plans for that belt. So it doesn't, it would be a disappointment for the crowd if it broke on a lame spot. But like, in terms of the title, it's not any promotion's world heavyweight title. It doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things if it accidentally changes hands, I suppose.
I mean, DDT kind of had that problem in the past with the Iron Man Heavyweight Championship. The other Asuka from WWE legit lost the title by losing to... There was a match she lost on another show, and DDT found out about it, and her response on Twitter was, "Oh, right, I forgot about that," and they had to completely change their plans for the championship the following few weeks. I think it was a Yumi Kurahara that ended up with the championship. It was on a Wave show, and DDT, like, they had to go on their website and keep kayfabe by saying, "Ayumi's the champion, but we have the physical belt. We are going to try and book Ayumi as soon as possible."
Just imagine Sanshiro Takagi pulling his hair out. A pair of chairs get involved, and Asuka bridges the seats with the tube, looking for a superplex through it. Akito escapes, goes for a powerbomb, but Asuka reverses that into a Rana, forcing Akito to dive roll over the tube, and the building goes nuts. He's so close to hitting that thing. And then Asuka comes even closer to hitting it when she does a John Woo-style flatback dropkick over the top of the whole structure.
The camera angle of that really captures that scene well.
Yeah, perfect.
And the thing about it is, it's a top rope spot, and it's one of the huge high points of the match. And it's kind of, it's that move of progression of, it looks like Asuka's going to have the upper hand. Then it looks like Akito. Then it looks like Asuka. Then Akito. So it does a really good job of sort of bringing this drama in what, in a normal match, that sequence would, basically, most people would forget it within like 20 minutes of a show. It's not really a special sequence, but in the context of the stipulation, it works fantastically well because of this added element.
Yeah, I do. I was wondering, like, how good would this match actually be without the light tube? And like, the extra dimension it adds is huge. It's the whole thing. It's so much. Like, this would have been a massive disappointment if this had ended with a pinfall.
Yeah.
There's a strike exchange, and I think what was supposed to be the finish, as Akito holds the tube up to block a kick, and Asuka's foot hooks it, but it doesn't break. And the crowd goes, "Ooh." And knowing this, no secret, I've watched this match probably a dozen times. And knowing this, I was watching very closely. And you can see Akito hold the tube in place firmer and give Asuka a look to maybe try it again. But instead, they choose to improvise. They kind of do an ugly exploder in the corner, almost taking out the referee in the process because he didn't know it was coming. And really, they didn't know it was coming either. Asuka fights out of a muscle buster attempt on the tube, landing on her head. Go ahead.
It's not a muscle buster. It's the Kiniku big move, which is a muscle buster setup into a double knee buster.
Ah, I see.
Which is why Asuka lands the way she lands and doesn't land like a normal muscle buster.
Well, she almost lands on her head on the tube anyway, which would have been a spectacular finish. But this is why we have you here, noted Akito fan, as you are, as you've mentioned many times before, that he is one of your guys. So they avoid disaster there. They redo the kick spot, and this time Asuka's foot breaks the tube, kicking it into Akito's face. However, her foot broke the tube, therefore she loses. You could see Akito really lean into the tube and almost brace it against his head to make sure it's going to work this time. The other thing was, like, you can see his face almost the whole time they go through the ad-lib finish, and he doesn't appear to say a word. So I don't know if they had this in the bag as a backup finish in case things went awry, or if they just pulled off a great ad-lib.
But given how complicated the two moves were at the end, like, I kind of feel like they had to be ready for it.
Yeah, but it's a real sort of like messy setup to get into it. Like, it's a, like they sort of like half miss a kick each. There's a struggle for like a body slam onto the tube, and then Akita has to switch Asuka's side so he's in the right place to do the exploder, and she doesn't go up properly for it first time, so he kind of has to deadlift her into it. There's the added complication of the referee getting in the way. It was a good rescue, but it was not without its own complications, I think.
The bit that I love with the finish is the way that you, and it's kind of comes back to the Keigo Nakamura's reaction of, I'm angry and I'm hurt, but I'm also happy that I've won this thing that doesn't actually matter, is Akita has this great look of both joy and pain.
Yes.
Of he's happy he won, but ow. But yay.
You've never seen a man so happy to have just been kicked in the temple and got glass in his face. I mean, we spoiled at the beginning. This is fantastic. I love this match. It's fabulously creative and goes off without a hitch until the finish, which, as I said, they rescue pretty well. And to be honest, I don't care about the redone finish. Like, it's in its own way, to me, this is every bit as good as the Ibushi Tanahashi match we talked about last week. It's one of my favorite matches, and not just in DDT. I've shown this to non-fans who got it and enjoyed it because of the built-in drama and the jeopardy of the tube, as we talked about. Although one of them later did remember it as the light bulb match between two women. So sorry, Akita. There are so many matches where the crowd lose interest and or the near falls don't connect for whatever reason. Here, they're wrapped for everything. Every near miss with the tube gets a gasp or a pop. They hold it's like it's less than 12 minutes, the whole thing, and they keep everybody's attention for all of that. And I think it goes long enough to get your money's worth, but it doesn't overstay its welcome, for sure. The wrestlers work it to perfection. Like I said, I've watched this a dozen times. It grips me every time. It's free on YouTube. From the opening video to the final bell is only 17 minutes, and I guarantee that every wrestling fan listening to this show will watch something longer, worse, and most likely both this week. Watch this as well.
Yeah, I think another way to describe this match is it captures the crazy energy and storytelling of a Looney Tunes cartoon, like Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Rabbit Season, Duck Season, back and forth, and you just get this crazy ending that kind of... where just one person it just backfires their best intentions. But it also just shows how pro wrestling can be literally whatever you want it to be. Whether it is comedy, choreography, action, sport, theater, whatever. Like, if you have an idea, you can apply it to a pro wrestling match, even if it's as dangerous as playing with glass.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's technically, I guess, it's a comedy match. But it's also one of the most, especially the first time I saw it, one of the most dramatic and gripping matches you'll ever see.
Well, I think the reason it's so dramatic as well is that even though it is a predetermined match, you have that chaos factor of just, you don't know when that thing is going to break.
That is true, yeah. Although the outcome is predetermined, it could accidentally end at any moment. highest recommendation, most definitely a must-see match. Mark, I'm guessing you feel broadly the same.
DDT has always had a soft spot in my heart since 2007, I'd say. And that was in part due to a 10-minute battle royal for the Ironman heavy metal weight title, where a ladder was the champion. And a lot of the comedy was based on people hitting a ladder and the ladder being made of metal. The main reason I love DDT is I think it's one of the few places where people really think about wrestling differently. Yes, DDT can have its flaws in that there'll be comedy, there'll be people that are basically doing the same gimmick or the same match for years. There's stuff that doesn't work. There's stuff that in hindsight, there's stuff that in hindsight, like, wasn't great. Early DDT was not known as a work rate promotion. There's all of these elements, but at its core, DDT is trying something different. DDT is not afraid to try something different, to try a parody, or to just explore the reaches and the stretches of what wrestling can be. And I think Akito and his extreme title runs was a fantastic example of someone that thinks about wrestling differently and is unafraid to try things. I've seen the guy have matches where the only stipulation was no rope breaks, but that completely changes how you wrestle a match. I've seen him do ring out matches years before Shingo Takagi and Taichi did one in New Japan. I've seen him come up with all these little ideas, and some work and some don't work. But at his heart, wrestling can be very simple and it can work. Wrestling can be very complex, and if you do it right, it can work. But for me, it's like that sense of trying something new. And when it really pays off, that just clicks for me. I like people playing with concepts. It's the books that I read. A lot of the books I read are not for everyone because they're weird. They're strange. One of the books I love has a narrator who turns out to be a rock, for goodness sake. Yes, it's a god, but it's also a rock.
Have you seen Everything Everywhere All at Once yet?
No, I'm planning on watching it this week.
Excellent. Good. If you like sentient rocks, you'll like that film.
And DDT, for me, it's that. It's playing with it. And this match is a perfect personification, a perfect example even, of how to play with wrestling and how to get more out of it, of how to add an element, of adding this light tube. And you get the humor. Yukinori Matsui deserves a little bit of credit here for being a fantastic comedy guy here, in that his reactions every time, especially early on, his reactions of shock help get the crowd into it and help get the crowd invested as well. And it's just a great example of it's good humor. It's as you said, the drama, the sense of tension, all those elements, the crowd investment, to me, that's DDT's biggest strength when it works, is that the crowd will go with you. And they went fully invested in this match. And I think you put the match over better than I can. But what I'll say is this is just a fantastic example of so many different elements of wrestling, and it feels fresh, and it's probably one of the five shortest matches that we cover in this podcast, but you won't feel shortchanged at all.
No, absolutely. So one funny note, on the DD Teach episode where we first talked about this, we sort of announced the must-see matches project. So I think it had been up and was on Twitter, and that was like the first other medium that like you announced the project in. And I say, as we close the show, I will be nominating this match. And almost exactly 13 months later, here we are.
Long-term storytelling.
Jamie, do you have anything else to add before we take this home?
Well, I know DDT has a very busy couple of months ahead. They'll be in Los Angeles for WrestleMania week. They're doing two shows. I'll definitely recommend you'd see at least the first one, which is their own show by themselves, because that's... If it's like the show they did in New York back in 2019, they're essentially doing a best of show. So all of their good ideas they've done for the last few years will be done in front of an American audience.
Yeah. Apart from an element we don't tend to talk about anymore. Like, Mark and I are both like quite big fans of Coming to America. That was our first episode of DD Teach, was covering that show. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing the sequel.
I mean, Coming to America was a fantastic way of, as Jamie said, it was playing the hits. It's like putting your best foot forwards. And it was probably top three shows of that year's WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah.
And if they capture that magic again, and I think they can, I think this show upcoming will again be like a top five potential show of the weekend.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Although I have a suspicion they might be overshadowed by their sister promotion, Tokyo Joshi Pro, because that's a company I have somehow followed since day zero, and I never imagined they grew as big as they would be.
That's a company when they hit, I really enjoy. So like I find some of their undercard stuff a bit hard to get through. But like the big hitters in that company, I really enjoy. Like I love Yuka Sakazaki. I like Miyu Yamashita. I love
Miyu Watanabe.
Miyu Watanabe was the other Miyu I was thinking of. Yes. It's a tremendous fun time. So Tokyo Joshi Pro is another WrestleMania adjacent show I'm looking forward to.
So I just want to say that DDT is a promotion that I think a lot of people have an opinion of before they see it.
Mm.
It's that place where Kenny Omega did silly stuff. It's that place where the likes of the people that like to tag people like Jim Cornette poke fun at. It's that place where it's wrestling done wrong for a lot of people. And don't get me wrong, there are bits of DDT, past, present, and possibly even future, that aren't done right. But DDT to me it's that sense of playfulness, it's that sense of trying something different.
Mm.
And as Jamie said earlier, with like the Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi match, at Shinkiba First Ring, DDT have had an influence on wrestling that a lot of people don't actually realize is there. And my thing is, if you've not tried DDT, just have a look around and give it a try. Some of it might not be for you. All of it might not be for you, but something about it is just that sense of freedom, just that sense of trying something new.
Mm.
It works. And this match was a perfect example of that.
Well, when I tweet out this show, I'm going to put a link to this match on YouTube. So hopefully this will be somebody's first foray into DDT and it will get them hooked. Jamie, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been a real pleasure to chat with you. The floor is yours to tell people where they can find you on the internet if you want to be found and all that good stuff.
Yeah, my work is found at dramaticddt.wordpress.com and also at dramaticddt on Twitter. I've been following four promotions now, which is DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Gamba, Pro Wrestling, and Basara. I also have gone through a momentous task of following all of the wrestlers as they are booked overseas. As you'll see, a lot of stuff happening WrestleMania weekend and a lot of stuff happening in the future with wrestlers going on excursions. There is also a lot of massive shows coming up, such as Judgment 2023, which is their 26th anniversary show. A lot of people don't realize this, but DDT is, I think, 2 or 3 days younger than WrestleMania 13, which is the Bret Hart Steve Austin match. That's how long the company has been around for.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just going to be so much more. Like, this is a company that, whether you realize it or not, and whether you like it or not, they are very influential and they have a lot of fingers and a lot of pies behind the scenes. There's probably going to be more big news happening in Japan this year that has some kind of association with DDT or Cyberfight. So you have to keep your eyes out for that.
Absolutely. As for this show, you can go to linktr.ee/mustseematches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations and much more. Every month, if you haven't heard enough of me, I am on GCP with Andy Ogden, reviewing the 1999 British wrestling TV show UWA Wrestling Rampage, which is equal parts hilarious and horrendous. That is at GCP Podcast 1, or look for GCP Podcast on your podcast app of choice. We are at Must See Matches on Twitter, Instagram, and Mastodon. I am at Kieran Edits, and Mark is
at Monkey_Buckles.
Next week, we move into the 7% bracket, and the returning Sean Orleans is bringing us AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura from Wrestle Kingdom 10, January the 4th, 2016. So that should be a tremendous hoot. We will see you then. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.